It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
On the line now, he's Doug McDermott, but this week, I guess he's officially Coach McDermott. He's not Greg McDermott, but he is Coach McDermott this week because of the basketball tournament and the Blue Crew, Creighton's team, going to be playing in action in Omaha later this week. Are you ready to be called Coach McDermott? Are you going to tell the players to just call you Doug? Like, what are you going to be one of those coaches like, hey, don't call me Coach. Don't call me Coach. Call me Doug.
A lot of people in Omaha, when I've been back this summer, have been calling me Coach Mac, because they've seen the news, you know, break on Twitter. So
yes.
I'd be worried. Mac should be worried about his job security.
I think so.
With me coming to town here.
Well, I mean, you know, the infamous clip that, yours truly and Matt Schick played a million times at our show, that Bruce Rasmussen introduced your dad for the next Creighton basketball coach as head coach Doug McDermott. So maybe this was all like part of Rass's plan, like, 12 years ago, where he thought eventually you were going to be the coach.
100%. Yep. I mean, and it was at the same spot, the
yep,
Circle
yep,
Arena. So
yep.
it's kind of meant to be.
It is.
So yeah. Maybe we'll have Rass come by for a little appearance.
So for people that don't know, so the basketball tournament, aka TBT, begins this week. It's a single elimination tournament that lasts a couple of weeks, where the winner wins $1 million. And there are lots of teams that are alums of colleges, and Creighton has a squad playing this Saturday at DJ Sokol Arena in Omaha. And as we've been saying, you are one of the assistant coaches along with head coach Josh Jones. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not sure if you watched last year, the boys out there hooping in Wichita. I was impressed with Josh on the sidelines. Like, he kind of had like that coach demeanor and look to him.
He really does. I mean, Josh has the coach's swag, and he's not afraid to call guys out. You know, I'm going to be the nice guy. I'll be the assistant, and I'll let Josh get after the guys. But, Josh has been really good for this TBT. You know, he's done an unbelievable job of organizing it the last few years and getting guys involved that have been, Jays in the past. And, we got a good team.
Yes.
We got Marcus Foster joining us, Ronnie Harrell. We've got Manny Suarez. We got a lot of throwback names that I think Jays fans will love to see. And, Mike Vandevort, who was a manager for Creighton when I was there, and Gibbs. And he's also a part of it. And they're doing a great job. And I hope a bunch of Jays fans come out to watch, because it'll be a blast.
Yeah. First, have you watched – are you one of those guys that watches the tournament? It's been going on for a handful of years now. It's really – for people that have never watched it, It's not like crummy basketball. These are legitimate players. Again, you heard the name, like Marcus Foster is playing in it. The team you guys are playing, Doug, have your first round opponent apparently has two guys that are projected top 10 picks next year. Like, these are real players. These are real. The competition's really good.
It really is. It really is. You know, Marcus Foster, was a G League champion last year. And like you said, two really young players that potential lottery potential next year. It's really good basketball. And I think the funnest part about it is that Elam ending,
yes,
or whatever they call it, but where they set the score and then it's the first team, to get there. I just think that's so entertaining. And it just brings a whole different dynamic to the game. And, I think for the fans that watched last year in Wichita, there's just crazy suspense. And obviously we hit a couple crazy shots down the stretch, and it was heartbreaking, but thankfully we're in Omaha and not Wichita this year.
Right, right. So for people, I want to dig into the Elam ending a little bit more. So for people that don't know, real quick, basically the first dead ball under, I think it's 2 minutes in with 2 minutes to go in the game, the clock shuts off, and then there is 8 points added to the team that's got the lead. So let's say the score is 80-78. The target score becomes 88 points. So whichever team reaches that target score, gets to 88 first, wins the game. And what it does, I will say, it makes the ends of games a lot more entertaining, and there's no intentional fouls. Both teams obviously got to stay aggressive. They got to finish the game out. Because you know how it is, like sometimes when you're up 9 with a minute to go, you kind of go into just chew the shot clock and heave one up kind of a thing. You got to stay aggressive. And then every game ends on a basket where a made shot, and we've seen it in the All-Star game, the NBA All-Star game a little bit the last couple of years, which is good. Like, could you ever see a world where the Elam ending becomes like more common, like is how it is in the NBA or anything like that? I don't, but I also don't know why I am necessarily opposed to it either.
Yeah, totally. I don't think it will either. I just think just the old school basketball heads, you know, and just won't allow it to happen. But, you know, you never know, man. I think just in doses, like, I think it'd be fun, you know, maybe even like in like a college, like,
yeah, like
holiday
a tournament.
Yeah. You know, like, you don't necessarily need to do it for the national title game, but like, you know, maybe at the Maui Classic or the, you know, out in Vegas, like something like that, just sprinkle it in here and there and see how people react to it. I think that would be awesome. I think like AAU ball for like high school kids, I think that would also be cool because the fans are like completely differently like into it.
Yes.
Once it gets down towards the stretch, you usually have the ball in your guy's hand and it's like almost like a one-on-one battle against the other guy's best defender. I just think it's like so cool to watch. And
yes.
I just think we need to sprinkle it in more. Because it makes the game a lot more entertaining.
I even think you could sprinkle it into like the NIT. You know, the NIT has been kind of like a ground for trying different rules and different things before. Throw it in the NIT and see what it's like. I mean, again, I would much rather see, I've heard some people like, do you think there'll ever be a 4-point line? Like, I'd almost rather see the Elam ending implemented into basketball than a 4-point line. Like, the 4-point line seems kind of way too gimmicky and weird to me. That's just
totally
me.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you there, Nick. And I think another thing I wish college would do is, I don't know if they've had even talks of this, but I wish they could advance the ball, you know, at the end of the game. I just think, you know, with timeouts, you know, getting your team, you know, yes. a chance to, you know, like instead of having to a full court heave, like a Leitner shot,
yep.
you know, I think it would just bring so many more game winners into play and just exciting moments, just being able to, you know, have your coach drop a set right in front of your bench. I wish that would happen at some point, but who knows?
Yeah, there's so many things with college that are unique to just college that I wish they would maybe look at changing, whether it's quarters. I'm not sure if you feel strongly about that. Like, if you wish men's college basketball would go to 4 quarters instead of 2 halves.
Right.
It's also interesting.
Because women's do 4 quarters, don't they?
Yes,
now?
They do. Yes. They. Yep. So literally, basically. Now, I don't know. I can't speak to what it's, you know, what things are like in, you know, in overseas and all that. I'm not sure if they do quarters and all that. But like basically men's college basketball is really the only basketball that just does 2 halves. Everything else is pretty much quarters. And then the other thing, and I know the old Big East tinkered with this for a little bit. They went to 6 fouls instead of 5. There is a part of me that wish we could look at that at the college level again, just because it's so rare. I feel like you can count on one hand the amount of times you're watching an NBA basketball game and a game is greatly impacted because of foul trouble. You know, it just never happens. But I feel like in college, it happens all the time.
Totally. And I just, it can kill the product too, because your best player can have 2 fouls, you know, in the first, you know, whatever, 4 or 5 minutes. And there, a lot of coaches will sit that guy, you know, the rest of the half. And it just kills the whole
yes.
rhythm of the game. And, you know, then the second half's kind of ugly, you know, from that player because you're playing catch up. And it just, I'd never even really thought of that. And I think it definitely would have helped our team, you know, at Creighton with all of his hacks, you know, me, Gibbs, and Jahen's reaching in all the time. it definitely would have helped us. But, you know, I think that would be another great thing to look into and would definitely help the product.
So we were talking before we you know started recording here that so you guys haven't necessarily started formal practices yet for this for the tournament. That's going to start kind of this week, and then you guys are going to get kind of ramped up as the game starts Saturday.
Yep. Okay. So this is the week. A lot of the guys arrived in Omaha last night, and you know, we got a couple of good facilities we're going to be working at. We got the North Star Gym. the JCC, and then we're also going to do some stuff at the Ryan Center later in the week. So yeah, we got a great team, like I said, and a lot of Creighton guys, but also some other guys.
Yeah.
Abnel Gilder, who was one of our better players last year. Great player. But yeah, just a great roster. Jahenz is playing again. Chat is playing again. I think Wayne Runnels was going to be one of our better players, but I think he had some knee issues kind of flare up last second. And for a lot of the guys that aren't playing, there will be plenty of alums, you know, kind of sitting behind our bench to be there. A lot of guys can't. Some guys can't play, you know, like Gregory and Kenny, because of their contract situation overseas.
Right.
So hopefully we can put together a good team. And you know, I think I'll be asking Mac for some sets here in a few days. maybe calling up Coach Gibbs for a few sets.
Yeah, yeah.
And have in our back pocket.
What do you think? We were joking like on how you're not necessarily in the trenches with the guys at this moment, you know, like you think that effort's not going to get it done. You got to get it going. You know, you're not doing that right now, but what do you think you're like, do you have the coaching itch at all? Like, is this going to be kind of like are you looking forward to this? Cause you're like, I could maybe see myself coaching one day at all. No,
you know what? I really don't right now, just cause I'm just so much basketball. And, you know, I think, what I really want to do is someday have like a fantasy camp where, you know, Coach Lutz and DeVries and Coach Mack and Murph, that I get to coach them for a game. You know, I get to have Jahenz and those guys with me, and we get to say whatever we want to those guys. That's kind of my dream world. If I were to coach, that would be the situation.
I love it. That's quite the fantasy camp. I like that. But yeah, you brought up, I'm looking at the roster right now. I'm not sure, you know, things are so in flux with different things. Like you brought up the Wayne Runnels situation, but like Devrell Biggs, it's at least on the roster right now. People remember him, Omaha Central, Trayshawn Thurman, same thing. Is Patton going to play?
Patton's
what's happening?
It's kind of been back and forth with
okay.
him. I don't know if he's,
not sure.
I don't know if he's dealing with the injury as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know.
But he would certainly help us.
Yes, he would.
Him and Kyrie. But I'm not sure what their situation is, overseas or with getting back in the league. So, but, man, it would be great to have those two just being Omaha kids. But regardless, we'll work with what we have.
Right.
And we'll try and get a dub. And I think that first game, like you said, is so important because it's probably like going to be our toughest competition, you know, right off the bat. So
yes.
if we could get that one, it would be huge for us going forward.
I'd be surprised if the crowd isn't just good. I think it's going to be great. I really do.
Totally.
I think Sokol Arena is going to be packed, and it's going to be cracking in there.
I agree. And I think, you know, I'm trying to envision, you know, kind of back in the day when we had Blue Jay Madness there,
yep.
the Midnight Madness, where, you know, it was packed for us. I could envision it being something like that. I really hope they come out because, like you said earlier, it's like high level basketball.
Yes, it
it's
is.
Not just some like all-star game where guys are showing off. You know, it's like legit hoops, and you know, guys are putting it all on the line because you know that's life changing money if you win the whole thing. So it's gonna be really fun to be a part of.
Yeah, again, you know, guys like Jimmer Fredette played in it a couple of years ago. I mean, there's real players that are playing in this thing, and yeah, I'm looking at the team. So you play team overtime. Two Thompson, I don't know if they're brothers or twins, but Amon Thompson and Asur Thompson are two 6'7" wings. Guards that are projected top 5 picks next year that you guys are going to be playing against. Now they're young pups, so you might be able to, you know, grown man them a little bit, but nevertheless, like that shows you the talent that you're. I mean, you're going against guys that could get their name called by Adam Silver 1 year from now.
Yeah, yeah, these guys are really good, and you know, I think when it showed that they were coming to Omaha, you know, we were a little scared, but
yeah.
You know, I think we got the guys. You know, I think Coach Jones will get the boys hyped up, and I think we'll be ready to go. You know, we were going to call you because we needed a defender.
Yeah, right.
but we figured you were busy with, you know, the newborn, and
yep.
So we just decided not to call you, but you know, we might reach out to your agent next year.
Yeah. I don't have, like, I guess I can do the Wayne Reynolds thing and say I have a perpetual knee problem, I guess we could say. I don't have any contract issues going on with overseas, but yeah, I got one good possession in you that'll result in a foul if you need that to happen. That's what, you know, what's crazy though, is looking at this, there's a Rucker Park site. Like, are they going to be playing at Rucker Park? I'm looking at really?
Yeah, they're going to be playing there. It's going to be crazy. That's what I've heard, at least. And, you know, I think, talk about Elam, however you pronounce it, ending there, that'll be something else to watch.
Yes, it will. I mean, so for people that, again, a lot of these games are broadcast on ESPN. If you haven't seen it, they are. I mean, for a basketball lover, you know, I mean, this is, I usually try to tune in every single year, and obviously watching the Jays last year was super fun, and this year it's going to be, again, I think the crowd's going to be great. So, yeah, people need to get, I think the game's at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, on Saturday night. It's at 7 o'clock. So people need to get out there and go check it out, man. That's what needs to happen. Let's talk about you for a little bit. First of all, how are you feeling? Ankle good? Everything good? Feeling healthy?
Yeah, everything's good. You know, it was an unfortunate situation. You know, with injuries last year, I just a lot of little things just kind of added up, and you know, I think a lot of it had to do with the kind of two or three seasons that were kind of just stuck together.
Yeah.
And just a lot of hoops, and I don't know, it just kind of added up, and you know, my knee kind of was bothering me for a little bit early in the year. And then right when I was feeling a lot better, I go out and first play of the game against, you know, the Pacers, I go for a three and just land completely on, O'Shea Brissett's foot, and just, you know, had a bad, really bad ankle sprain that had me out for like 8 weeks. So it was not ideal, but, I'm fully recovered now. I spent a lot of time with the Spurs training staff, and we've got it right. And I'm finally, you know, back to full clearance. So I'm ready to go for next year. It'd be a fun one.
What are you, we talked a year ago and, you know, you were excited about the opportunity to play for Greg Popovich. What was it like? I mean, this is when you're writing down the three or four greatest basketball coaches of all time, you have to write down Greg Popovich. What was it like playing for him?
It was unbelievable, Nick. It was one of the coolest years of my life. Just cause, you know, being a kid and, you know, obviously watching the Tim Duncan years and Manu and Tony and just seeing all that with, you know, Coach Pop, you know, I was definitely intimidated, the first day of training camp. I was like scared, you know, just like, you know, didn't know what to expect, but he was awesome. He was so cool to be around every day. You know, he's one of those guys where it's truly bigger than basketball. You know, you get just a great human being. And you know, basketball is probably his second priority. You know, he cares about, you know, life and, you know, having fun as a group, more than basketball, which is pretty cool to be a part of. You know, he brings everyone together. There's definitely some hard moments. You know, he's gonna call it how he sees it, you know, in film sessions, and which is great. I like to be coached. And I think it's great for our young group. And you know, we had countless, you know, team dinners on the road, you know, where he would pretty much rent out a whole restaurant and, you know, bring us wine and just give us whatever we wanted to eat. Just made sure we were all having conversations about our past and where we're from. And just, he's just a great guy. And we had a great staff, and Manu was around pretty much every day, which was so cool for me, you know, being able to pick his brain every day. Like I said, it's great playing for a legend. He's fun to play for. And you know, one of the smartest minds, you know, I've ever been around.
Yeah, I remember your dad was beaming with pride when Greg Popovich had a quote about you. I know the start of it was that he's been great. Quote: he's been great for our team because he obeys the basketball gods. Wait, did that quote get back to you? What does it mean? Like, because he was raving about you. You know, you cut with purpose. You're smart. You're intelligent. You're unselfish. Like, that had to, I mean, what's it like, you naturally kind of play in a way that would suit him, but I'd have to imagine that, like, that hearing a quote like that really, really had to hit you in your basketball heart pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. When a guy like that is saying that about you, it's pretty special. I think my dad sent that to me, and, you know, he's, He's great. I mean, I wish I could hear those quotes every day in film, because it's not always that good. It's not always that nice coming from him. And, you know, he definitely is honest with you, which is awesome.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of these guys realize, you know, how big of a legend this guy is. You know, a lot of our guys on our team, you know, they're 19. Like Josh Primo was like 18 years old. He didn't have his license last year. You know, it's crazy. Like, right. I was 30 years old and like the oldest guy on the team, you know, like 4 years. So playing with a bunch of kids and, you know, they're so talented and, you know, the sky's the limit for a lot of these guys. But it's just huge in their development, having, you know, Pop and Manu and,
right,
you know, all these legends around to be able to pick their brain, because, you know, who knows how long Coach Pop's going to be doing it. And
right.
We got to soak it all in while we can, you know?
Yeah, and I'll ask you about this, and I don't even know what you can really get into, but because you are kind of in a weird situation right now with San Antonio, just because, you know, there are a lot of trade rumors going around that, you know, the trade from San Antonio with you're trading DeJounte Murray to the Hawks. There is this feeling that is San Antonio trying to rebuild? I guess what's it like for you right now? Or are you just one of those dudes like, listen, I'm getting myself ready, and that's all I'm gonna think about?
Exactly. You know, I obviously you kind of see, you know, what's going on, and it's hard not to think about that stuff. You know, obviously when I signed with San Antonio, you know, I knew the direction, you know, they're going to go younger.
Yep.
They're going to still try and win, but, you know, try to develop guys, not in a way where you're necessarily trying to lose every game.
Yep.
You're trying to go out there and win. And that's the way Pop coaches. He'll never throw a game, you know, to get a higher pick. So, I think like I'm in a spot right now where, they need veterans on the team. You know, they need a couple guys that, you know, can, you know, mentor these young guys. I got Joe Wieskamp and Primo, and, you know, we have three new rookies now, and just, you know, Jakob Poeltl's another vet, and Josh Richardson. I think every team that's kind of going through this phase needs guys like us, you know, to kind of help guide all these other guys. And, and if anything happens, you know, I've been traded 4 or 5 times. I kind of know the deal.
Right.
You know, I have a great job. You know, I got 2 more years left on my deal, and, you know, I'm willing to play wherever. So, but I love San Antonio.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what happens, man. It's fun to watch you play for the Spurs. You know, it's just, we'll hopefully everything shakes out good for you, and wherever you end up is, because I know for you, we talked a year ago, I know you really want an opportunity to play. You know, you did it a little bit with the Pacers, you know, playing in the playoffs, playing, because I'm sure it's do you sit there in May and in June and you're watching, you know, these playoffs, and just like, I'd imagine your competitive juices are flowing pretty good, and thinking, man, I gotta get into one of these situations.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I love, you know, watching those playoff games, and I try and envision myself out there. And, you know, I see a lot of my friends, you know, playing and competing at the highest level. You know, Derek White was with us last year for, you know, majority of the year, and to see him go to Boston and be able to get to the finals was so cool to watch. And, you know, someday, you know, I want to be in that position, you know, and, like you said, San Antonio is, it's a great spot to play. And I always kind of felt like my game would really thrive with like the Spurs style of play.
Right.
And, you know, they're a first class organization. You know, they treat their players so well. You know, and I want to be here as long as I can, but, you know, if something were to happen, you know, it'd be fun someday to be, you know, competing in those, in the highest level, playing deep into the playoffs. And, you know, I know someday, you know, it'll happen. You know, you just got to stay patient, and we'll get there.
By the way, you brought up those Popovich dinners and the good wine. Your dad always gives me crap because I like to drink wine. But if you, there's no way he can give us both crap. Like, if you now are a wine guy and you and I drink wine, he can't make fun of us. Are you with me or no?
Can't. Yeah. I'm totally with you there. His wine knowledge is so weak.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing. It really is. You know, I'll go home in the summertime and look at their wine storage, and it's just a bunch of gifted Cabernets, you know, the same stuff. And, you know, with Popovich, we're drinking all these,
oh gosh,
you know, these vintage Chardonnay, Pinots, right, Burgundies, you know, all this all this great wine, and he knows all of his regions. And, you know, that's honestly when I'm trying to make small talk with him, I'm like just trying to pick his brain about the best wine, you know, because he knows all of it. And, you know, he's had a few bottles in his life. So, but I definitely, between him and TJ McConnell, who I played with in Indy, probably the biggest wine snob I know, you know, I got it covered when I go to dinner. Okay. I'm just sending them, a photo of the menu and tell me what to order.
Okay, good. We got to chip away at your dad. He's got to, he just nonstop giving me crap. So we got to get him on, totally. On the right path. Speaking of your dad, let's talk about Creighton. Because, I mean, last year was incredible, Doug. I mean, it was a bunch of freshmen and then a Division II transfer in Ryan Hawkins. I don't think anybody had any clue what to expect, including the coaching staff. You know, I think they felt like they had talent, but you don't know until you get out there and the bullets start flying. And, they go to the Big East. They finish fourth in the Big East. They go to the Big East Tournament Championship game. They beat San Diego State. They got the ball against Kansas, down one with a minute left. Arguably played them tougher than anybody did in the tournament that obviously KU went on to win a national title. What, as you watched the whole season, what was there one thing that stood out to you, one player, one element of the team? Because last year was one of the more remarkable coaching jobs I think your dad's had.
Yeah, I mean, it was the most proud I've ever like been watching a group, you know, from the start to finish of a season, you know, I always remember just sitting in my house, you know, celebrating off my chair when we beat Southern Illinois, you know, yeah. You know, it was like a big deal. And I'm like, this could potentially be a long year, you know, through this Big East. And, then just simulating to being down one against Kansas, like, you know, I was just so happy for all those guys. And I thought just the way they all grew up, you know, obviously with Ryan Nemhard and Kolf being hurt against Kansas and seeing Trey, you know, handle the ball against pressure against a Kansas defense. Just so happy for, you know, Trey and just the way he was able to grow up, you know, throughout the year and, you know, pretty much play a completely different position than we had him all year. And obviously Hawk and his impact on just the program, you know, I wish we could have him for 3 more years.
Oh my God.
Or like 10 more years. I know. I mean, that guy's an incredible leader. And, you know, I think we're really going to miss him, but just so much talent on that team, you know, and a lot of really good kids. You know, I go back there and just hang out in the gym, and they're all just gym rats. You know, they're all always wanting to get better. You know, Arthur, Ryan, you know, both Ryans, and, and now you add in, you know, the Baylor from South Dakota State, who's going to be incredible in that Hawkins role, you know, where he can be a leader, but also, you know, be one of our better players and be able to get everyone involved. And they just have so much talent. It's exciting stuff. I know the expectations are crazy high, but you know, you can't really ask for more. You know, we're officially, you know, a blue blood program. You know, people are talking about us, you know, being a top 5 preseason team. It's pretty incredible. You know how far we've come. So just really exciting times.
It's, and I say this with full recognition that I was far from a great defensive player, but. Yep. Is it amazing to watch how the program over the course of the last decade evolved into last year being like, it was a defensive-led team. It was if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a top 25 Ken Pom defense. Like, remember, that was always the knock on, you know, the Blue Jays 10 years ago, 8 years. It was just like, well, you know, I don't know how good they're going to be defensively. I know 1 year you guys wore the field goal percentage ranking or your defensive ranking on your shorts where you guys had to kind of own it. It's pretty amazing to watch the growth on the defensive end, but it also hasn't necessarily sacrificed the way they play offensively.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And you're talking to another guy who didn't pride himself on defense too. but last year watching some of those games, you know, where we couldn't make a shot and we're still, you know, beating, you know, UConn, Villanova. Yeah. It's like, it's crazy. The how far, you know, this program has, you know, changed. And I think our staff has just been so good. You know, I think Paul Lusk, obviously that's at Purdue, had a huge impact on our defense. Obviously he went back to Purdue, but I think having a guy obviously like Kalkbrenner completely changes everything. You know, he alters every single shot at the rim, and you know, he's making guys shoot tough mid-range shots, and it's it's pretty amazing when you can watch, you know, a Creighton team that's known for shooting and a program that's known for letting it fly, being able to kind of hang their hat on the defense at the end of the floor. It's been fun to watch, and it just keeps us in so many more games. You know, you don't have to shoot 50% from the three to win a game anymore. You know, we can go in there and we can win in the 50s or 60s. We don't have to score 80, 90 points every game. So it's definitely great for our program. And I think it's going to just help us going forward. Just the amount of talent we have on that end of the floor.
Do you ever get to play with the guys anymore? Do you get on the floor with them?
I haven't as much lately.
Yeah.
When I come back, you know, this week and going to be there for a while, and now all the guys are back working out, I think I will more now just because, you know, these guys are – I mean, I want to play against Kalkbrenner and Frederick King. Like, I think it could help me. You know, like, these guys are all so talented. You know, I like playing one-on-one against guys just to, you know, get better on both sides of the ball. And, you know, we have some legit NBA guys now. So it's awesome. You know, these guys are so talented, and you know, I think we got some pros on that team for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Kaluma just looks like a pro.
He really does.
You know what I mean?
It's
incredible. I mean, Baylor Shireman was in the, you know, he went through the kind of the NBA draft process, and I'm not sure how much of him you got to watch. He's like, if like Grant Gibbs, a little bit of like Mitch Ballack and a little bit of like Larry Bird. Now I know I'm like creating the greatest player of all time, but he's got like, he'll throw around the back passes. He'll pull up from 30 feet. Like, the dude Creighton fans are going to love watching that guy play.
He is a Creighton guy. You know, he's an unselfish player. I've been trying to think of comps with him too, and I really starting to think like he's like a Joe Ingles. I don't know if people, you know, that watch NBA, like a lefty, 6'7", you know, can handle it, really unselfish, shoots the shit out of it.
Feisty,
you know, on the defensive end. I think he's going to be huge for us, and Jays fans are going to love him. He's an NBA player for sure, and you know, he's not one of those guys that's going to come in and be like, I want the ball in my, you know, I want to get my shots. He's going to get everyone involved, and he's also going to get his as well. So he's a really, really fun player to watch. And, you know, Jays fans are going to love him.
I want to kind of wrap this up with just, I got about like five or six kind of just random fun basketball questions I want to bounce off, and then we'll get you out of here, Dougie.
For sure.
Do you have, I mean, I felt like heading into the finals, I already had Steph Curry in my all-time top 10 basketball players ever. But that obviously, that conversation got ramped back up after what Steph did, because he was incredible in the finals. Do you have a top five of all time? Because I think what's hard is there's kind of like, I almost have two different top fives. There's like, I can give you the top five of dudes that I watched and I knew what I was watching. You know, it's hard for me to be like, oh, I tell you what, Bill Russell. You know, like I can recognize, and he would be in my all-time top 10, but obviously I didn't watch Bill Russell play. Do you have, like, who would be in your top? Do you have a top five?
I have a top five, and, you know, I think, yeah, like you said, I don't want to disrespect some of the legends that
you
I
can't.
Never really got to see play. You know, there's so many guys like that, you know, like Wilt and Bill. Like, if it were me, like, I would put Michael number one. I would put LeBron two, Larry, Magic. And then I would probably, yeah, like you said, I would put, I'm like between like a Steph or like even a Kobe.
Yeah.
Like, those are kind of the guys that I think of next. And I know there's, you can put so many guys in that spot, and there's a lot of interchangeable there. But, you know, I used to always have these arguments. Obviously, everyone had these arguments with Patrick Sellers back in the day. You were probably
yes.
a part of those too, because he had like Steve Nash and like Jason Kidd, and like, what are you talking about? But I also respected that because he was going off recency and you know, guys that we actually get to watch play. And I think a guy like Steph, you got to throw in there because just the way he's changed the game, you know, you see the style of play now is just, you know, it's a lot more entertaining. You know, guys are shooting a lot of threes, and, you know, it's fun to watch. And I think Steph's a guy that's completely changed a generation of basketball, and it's going to change it for years to come, because, you know, all these kids now can shoot it from anywhere, and it's just going to keep keep expanding. There's going to be so many great shooters to come out of this generation because of Steph.
Yeah, because you brought it up. You know, you don't want to disrespect the legends. I think the hardest part about these conversations is it is really generational. And I think the thing that you have to balance is you don't want to be that person that is like, everything was better back in the day. Everything sucks now. Things were better back in the day. But you also don't want to be the prisoner of the moment guy in that, like, but everything is better now and not acknowledge anything that happened in, you know, 1970, 1980, 1990. So it's hard for you do have to find a way to balance those two worlds. And I think basketball is one of the hardest things to do with that.
Yeah, I agree completely. Like if I was having this conversation with my grandpa, you know, we'd be bringing up, you know, Havlicek.
Yes.
And, you know, like, you know, guys like that. And, you know, if I'm having this conversation with the Creighton guys in the locker room, you know, we're talking about LeBron, we're talking about Curry, Kobe, you know, it's a totally different conversation. So you really can't win. You can't really win in, there's no like specific top five, you know, it's just, there's so many different ways you can go with it. But you know, there's just been so many great players that have obviously impacted all of us. And, you know, I just think obviously Mike and LeBron are always going to be like 1-2
for me.
That's me
too. Yep.
And I know people are always arguing who's better between, you know, yeah. But you know, let's just say, you know, they're
both
the
really good
greatest players to ever play the game. Yep, let's leave it at that.
I'm totally with you. Those two, that's
who's
it.
Your top five, Nick?
So
I never asked you.
For me, you know, because if I would go all time, you know, with making sure I balance and respect everything that, you know, everybody's done to me, it's Jordan 1, LeBron 2, I'd probably put Kareem 3,
yeah.
And then I'd probably put Magic 4, Kobe 5, I'd probably go Larry Bird 6, Steph at number 7, and then I'd probably go Shaq 8, Bill Russell 9, Tim Duncan 10. That's probably
like
my top 10 right now.
I can't believe that I left Kareem out, especially after watching Winning Time.
Right.
That was an incredible show, and I guess I just didn't realize
how great
he was,
right?
And what he just his whole mindset, you know, on and off the court is so cool to watch.
Yeah. Let's expand it to. Do you have? I get people all the time emailing me, Creighton fans emailing me. Who's your top five Creighton players of all time? Who you got? What do you have? Do you have a all time Creighton top five?
It's one of those things again, like where a lot of the guys that came before me, like long before me, you know, I didn't really get to even see play. But I mean, obviously I'm aware of who they are.
Right.
But like, haven't like seen highlights, you know, but I think me and Kyle are up there.
You two are locks. To me, you start there. You, Kyle, or locks.
Yeah. And then, you know, you got to go probably Silas.
Yep.
Or Benoit Benjamin.
Yep.
That's
my four. There's one more that I think you got to throw in there.
Is it Harstead or am I way off?
I would throw Rodney Buford in there.
Oh yeah. Buf for sure. I mean, I don't know how I forgot about him. He was
the all-time leading scorer that you broke.
Yeah.
And that's where, to me, watching you break his record made me respect him even more. Cause I got to watch you every game and you were just like, you know, it was 25 like every night. And then you would still look and be like, well, Doug still got some work to do to get to Rodney. You know what I mean? Like, so it made you realize, like, damn, Rodney was cooking people for a long time. So that would be, so to me, it's you, Kyle, Paul Silas, Benoit Benjamin, and Rodney Buford. To me, that's the all-time five. And then after that, then you get into Harstad, Gallagher, and then
there's
it gets
so
hard.
Many guys.
I know.
If we could have had JP or Kyrie for all 4 years, you know, like those
right.
guys are on a completely different level too. So it's hard, you know. There's been so many good players obviously to come through, and like AT,
yep.
like Tolliver, like he had like an unbelievable professional career, and like, you know,
yes.
he was a developed. He stayed all 4 years at Creighton, obviously, and like really developed year to year. You know, it's. You got to throw him in the mix, obviously, and you know, got Gibson and oh man, there's just been so
there's
many
a
good
ton
players.
Sears, all those guys. Like, I think Because for me, I felt like the career that
Nate Funk was incredible. Well,
that's like, what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you then, underrated Creighton player of all time. Oddly enough, I feel like it's Nate Funk now. I don't feel like Funk gets the love that, like, because you probably were watching him when you were, when your dad was coaching in Northern Iowa. Like, that guy was, people don't understand how good he was.
So good. And like Nate Funk, like those teams were so fun to watch. And, you know, he broke my heart so many times, you know, being a Panther fan, you know, as a kid. And, you know, guys like Johnny Mathis and, you know, House and, you know, just all those guys.
Dane Watts. I always feel like Dane was
Watts
a little underrated.
Just always killed us.
Yep.
And, you know, was Brody. Brody was one of Kyle's teams.
Yes,
was,
but still. Brody was
just
a power.
Those teams were so stacked, and you know, I just, you know, Coach Gibbs. I think he's a very underrated Jay. You know,
I agree.
His impact on the program, I guess you could say. I mean, obviously, he wasn't like putting up crazy stats, but just his ability to connect everyone. He's an underrated one for me, obviously as well.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you that over the Greg McDermott era. Is it most underrated Jay? I wrote down Gibbs, but I think Gibbs always gets talked about because Gibbs is just like famous. You know what I mean? Like Gibbs just like is when people think about the last 10 years, they throw out your name. And then oftentimes Gibbs is one of the first couple of names that gets thrown out there. It in the past day, I'll give you one. You threw out his name earlier. I think Gregory Echenique is one of the most underrated dudes of the past 10 years.
Oh, 10, yes. 12 years. Yes. Gregory was, he was special, and I think obviously his impact on our team, you know, defensively, and you know, I sometimes I think, you know, obviously with me out there, sometimes it was tough on Gregory on the offensive end, just because you know I was getting a lot of the touches, and you know, he was just like the most unselfish teammate I played with. You know, he was never complaining. Like we could have thrown it to Gregory on the block, you know,
every play
8 out of 10 times, and he would get a bucket. You know, like. But he was willing to sacrifice and play, you know, high low stuff with me and Ethan, and you know, I think Gregory's just an all time teammate, and I think some more guys that played under Mac after me, you know, like a Mitch, a Marcus, you know, Marcus Foster, obviously Zigarowski, and I think Mo Watson, was an incredible point guard, and obviously his injury just completely killed us. But I think he is one of the best point guards to ever play for us. I just think he's so talented, and you know, just the way he was able to, you know, get JP and Kyrie and you know everyone shots. He was so fun to watch for me.
It was so fun with Gregory because so many when you would play the big boys, whether it was North Carolina or whoever, Alabama, these teams that when you play a mid-major, they think they're going to be able to punk you in the inside, and it was always so fun. Like Gregory allowed you guys to not have to double the post. It just was so fun to watch these teams try to attack Gregory, and Gregory could hold up one on one against anybody. And it really changed your team that for in particular, like the year you guys beat Alabama and then lost to North Carolina, like that year in particular, Gregory's ability to defend one on one in the post was so important for your team, because you just didn't have guys like that in the Valley.
No, he completely changed everything for us. And you know, Gregory was, you know, guys in the Valley, they were looking at him, they were scared. You know, you know, who's this guy? You know, he was, and if we could have seen Gregory in the Big East, you know, that's where he fit. You know, he's a Big East body,
totally.
And you know, like you said, in those tournament games where we had to play some more athletic teams, you know, he completely changed everything for us.
Couple more, and then you're out of here. I don't even know if I have a question about this, but I think it's interesting. Something I've noticed as I watch NBA basketball, and in particular NBA playoffs, it's interesting to me how much offenses just kind of devolve into hunting a mismatch, and that becomes everything they're trying to do. Like they're trying to set screens to get a switch to get get Jimmy Butler onto Peyton Pritchard, and then that's what they do. Why don't you think that? Maybe it's just because more teams aren't switching all five screens, but it's interesting how that doesn't. You don't see that a lot in college, right? Like you don't see necessarily teams being like, "All right, we need to hunt this guy and focus solely on that." That's more of an NBA thing. What is that? Am I on to something? Like, what do you? Is that accurate? Why do you think that is?
is very accurate. You know, you see it a lot, and I think that's why you're seeing teams, the, you know, the two teams are in the finals, and, you know, deep in the, they have guys 1 through 5 that can defend all positions, and, you know, it makes it tough on some of us not as athletic defenders to be out there. And it's something, you know, it happens a lot more in the playoffs. In the regular season, it doesn't seem to happen as much unless it's like crunch time,
right?
You know, down under 2 minutes, you're usually having your 5 best defenders out there, so you can do that switching 1 through 5 and, you know, be able to hold your own against a Jimmy Butler, you know, or a, you know,
a Jason Tatum,
Donovan Mitchell, Tatum, you know, Luka, these guys, Jalen Brunson, who are just incredible one-on-one players. And I'm not sure why it doesn't happen as much in college, but in the NBA, it's definitely one of those things when you get to playoffs, you have to, it's almost like the game changes, because in the regular season, it is a lot of switching 1 through 5 off the ball, on the ball. And then in the playoffs, it's literally you're hunting the weakest defender and you're trying to go out at them. And, you know, I think refs, you know, call the game differently,
right,
in the NBA as well. And it's just, there's a lot of mismatches and there's a lot of talented guys with the ball in their hands, and it can make it really tough when you're guarding some of these guys that are so crafty at not just scoring, but knowing how to get fouled and knowing
right.
how to get calls. You know, there's some really crafty guys like that with Jimmy and James Harden and guys like that can just get to the free throw line at will.
Last thing, we're out of here. It's crazy. So we're almost a year removed from when July 1st of last summer is when the NIL rules changed for college sports and what we're talking about with college basketball. What have you kind of thought as you've watched it from afar, the NIL stuff? Like, I've always kind of told people, for me, I feel like I can be for players getting paid. Like, I think it's great. But I feel like I can also say that by also acknowledging some of the inherent issues that have come along with NIL and how much it's seeped into recruiting and all those kinds of things. What from a guy that would have made an astronomical amount of money on NIL if it would have been you know, available to you when you were in college and someone that's watching it now, what has anything stood out to you a year into it?
Yeah, you know, like you said, I'm happy for these guys too, being able to get paid. You know, because I think they certainly deserve some, and, you know, they put in a lot of work and they're playing in front of, you know, 18,000 fans and they're on Fox on Saturday. You know, they deserve a piece of the pie. And, you know, I think I try not to think about, you know, me and,
right.
and our group, like, you know, times have changed so much. So you can't even really go there. You know, you can't be too bitter about it. I think it's just the times we're in, and I think it's a good change. I think Creighton is in a really good situation because we do have a lot of resources and, you know, a lot of money and, you know, a lot of Fortune 500 companies in Omaha, you know, that can really help out these guys. And I do feel bad for some, you know, Missouri Valley, like smaller
right.
programs, you know, that are essentially turning into, if you have a good player, they could be with you for a year and then they leave. You know, it's like a junior college. So I feel for programs like that. But I think we're in good shape with it. Guys are getting paid great money and,
yep.
you know, it's a crazy time, but I do feel for some of those smaller programs that are going to lose guys because of that. And, you know, but I think the product's going to be good. I think it's great that we're in the Big East now and we're going to be able to have the resources, you know, to get some of these guys. And, you know, I think we're one of the better suited teams in the Big East for it. So just overall, you know, happy these guys are getting paid and, you know, to play the game. And, you know, maybe we'll be able to keep guys longer in school.
Totally. I was just going to say
you
that.
Know,
I
think that's huge. You know,
right.
instead of chasing, you know, maybe the overseas or G League route, if you're on the fringe of, you know, being drafted, I think we have the resources. A lot of other programs have resources to keep guys longer and have them play, you know, at the highest level of college basketball, you know, for an extra year, and they and their families will be taken care of. So I think that's the biggest positive from all of it.
Yeah, because I mean, even outside of Creighton, I mean, you've seen Drew Timmy staying in college for another year, Hunter Dickinson staying, Trace Jackson Davis staying.
Johnny Juzang a year ago staying. Like we have seen examples where it's been good for college basketball. It's just going to be interesting to watch it continue to evolve. But I do agree with the whole thing about, I even think about a guy like if Tucker DeVries wasn't playing for Darren DeVries, Tucker might be a guy that would have balled out for Drake for a year, and then some of the big boys would have come knocking and swooped up Tucker to go play somewhere else. You know what I mean? And I'm with you. Like, I love that Creighton's in the Big East. I still have a soft spot for the Missouri Valley Conference, and sometimes that is, those kinds of programs are just such weird spots, right? Like, where when a guy gets good, they usually get plucked away. It's tough.
Totally. Yeah, it really is. It really is. And yeah, I like it's so fun watching Tucker. I'm glad you brought that up, just because I can't believe how much he's growing up, watching him
nuts.
Play. And me and Jahenz were talking about it the other day. We're like, oh my God, this guy is like 6'8".
It's crazy.
I just remember when he was a little kid with the long hair and just running around camps, and now he's like a legit high level college basketball player. It's so fun to watch.
It is. So like when I was working the Creighton basketball camp, I was in charge of the 5-year-olds, and he was one of my campers. And like, I would have to tie, he didn't know how to tie his shoe. Like, I would have to tie Tucker's shoe. And now this dude is like in arch madness, like putting in work in the Valley tournament. And it's just, it's so much fun to watch. It really is.
All these coaches' kids, AJ Green, who played at Northern Iowa. He was another one of those kids that, was at camps. And Tucker, and you got Preston Murphy's kid, Lil P, he's balling.
He's a baller.
It's crazy. It just shows how old we're getting, Nick.
Trust me. The Tucker thing, I don't know what it is about him. Him being this huge college player is just, it's bizarre to me, man. It really is. Makes me want to drink some Greg Popovich wine. That's what I need to do with that.
Totally.
When I start feeling like that. Doug McDermott, Coach McDermott, later on this week. Again, make sure I'm sure there are still tickets available. I think it's going to be tough to get in, so you need to plan accordingly, Blue Jay fans. It's the Omaha Blue Crew against Team Overtime. It's July 16th. Game starts at 7 o'clock. Doug's going to be on the sidelines coaching these dudes up. It's really good basketball. You're going to be watching and see some former Jays. Everybody should go check it out. Doug, really gracious with your time, my man. Thank you so much, pal.
Thanks, Nick. Always a pleasure, man. We'll get some wine soon and see everyone in Omaha at the TBT.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Dougie.
A Huda Media Production.